Chapter 4. War Comes to Morale. 1942. It was Friday, 23 January 1942. Brothers James, Ephraim and Irvin were worried as they walked briskly along the well-worn track to Pararu Plantation, about 5 kilometres to the southeast of their mission. Pararu was a well-organised commercial plantation, where the brothers were able to procure some basic stores, purchase small items for their gardens, and even buy stock at times. It was a convenient point for hearing news of the outside world, as there was a radio there. The previous evening, the brothers had received a message from the plantation manager. The war threat was imminent. Japanese planes had been sighted. The brothers were asked to come the following day for a meeting to discuss the situation. As the brothers drew closer to the plantation, they saw a young man running towards them along the track. "The boss wants you to come quickly. There is terrible news. The Japanese bombed Tulagi last night." The tension at the meeting of the European residents of Marau Sound was evident. After a long discussion, they decided that the best plan would be for them to evacuate if Japanese forces occupied the area. The brothers believed that a Japanese invasion of their mission was about to take place. Over the following week, the brothers made hurried preparations to protect their school and to evacuate. James was afraid that the Japanese forces would seize his annals. He did not want to reveal the plans they were making or his obvious sympathy for the Allied cause. The entries over the following days show his apprehension while giving no information about what they were doing during those anxious times. For example, January the 24th. Preparations. Rest censored. James wrote the words "rest censored" in the annals because he did not want to give details about the preparations they were doing, presumably hiding their valuable items in case of a Japanese raid. A couple of other examples. January 25th. Boys told to be ready to return to school when they hear the conch shell blow. This was to be the signal, a warning of danger. January 26, 27. As for January 24, censored. News not promising. Prolonged preparation. In fact, there was no immediate invasion. However, there were rumours that missionaries and civilian expatriates were to be evacuated from the island. The rumours were true, but the evacuation did not happen until 10 months later. Fierce fighting on Guadalcanal. It was to be a difficult and tragic year for the people of the Solomons, and for the church there. The Marists decided not to flee from the war. Bishop Aubin, influenced by the Marist tradition of not running away from difficult situations, and hoping the Japanese would not interfere with missionaries, asked his priests, brothers and sisters to stay on. Later that year, the American general ordered a general missionary evacuation. In May 1942, the Japanese occupied Tulagi with a large force. The resident British commissioner had relocated his headquarters to Malaita Island after the bombing in January. The Japanese made their first visit to Bishop Aubin's headquarters at Visale in July 1942, soon after landing on the island. A month later, the Americans staged a successful landing and, amid some fierce fighting, secured the partly built Japanese airfield. U.S. commanders renamed it Henderson Airfield after American airmen killed in the Battle of Midway. Ferocious fighting occurred over the following months until the Japanese finally withdrew from Guadalcanal in February 1943. In 8 months of war, 20,000 Japanese and 7,000 Americans were killed. At the end of August 1942, two priests, Fathers Ongebrink SM and Dumal SM, and two French Marist missionary sisters, Sylvia and Odilia, were captured and killed by Japanese near Ruavatu. Visale Mission Station was bombed in early September, forcing Bishop Aubin to move to Tangarare. Soon after, the American commander, General Vandegrift, ordered the evacuation of all missionaries. Reluctantly, he gave permission for Bishop Aubin and six priests to stay on the island. Between October and December 1942, 10 priests, 5 SM brothers, and 19 sisters, as well as our 3 FMS brothers, were evacuated. There are 1,000 fascinating Guadalcanal war stories. Meanwhile, back on Marau Sound, the brothers rescue American airmen. After the tense January meeting at Paruru Plantation, life settled down somewhat, and James wrote more freely in his annals until early May 1942, when he fell silent again with a guarded entry. "Tulagi occupied by Japanese," he wrote. "Much doing around here." End of quote. As he did several times, he left a big space for writing the story at a safer time. He never got around to filling those blanks. The invasion of Japanese ground troops caused anxious excitement at Marau, which was intensified a few days later when it was rumored that an American plane was forced down nearby due to lack of fuel. The story was confirmed when a runner from Avu Avu arrived on 10 May with a letter from Father Buddha SM. Buddha gave some details of the forced landing at the beach at Balo, which is about 30 kilometers west of Marau. The two Americans, safe and with Buddha, wanted to rejoin their troops and asked for help to get back to Aola, a government station on the north coast. Buddha, knowing that the brothers had a reliable boat at Marau, the Ramada, asked if they could transport the airmen. Never slow to accept a challenge, even if it involved great risk, and keen to do his patriotic duty in supporting the war campaign, James didn't hesitate. He set out at once for Avu Avu in the Ramada boat, arriving just on dusk. Accompanied by the two grateful Americans, James began the return trip to Marau at midnight, travelling in heavy seas, to arrive safely in bright daylight at 8 a.m. On arrival, they spotted two Japanese planes overhead, routine patrols, unrelated to the rescue of the airmen. Safe at Marau, the Americans suggested that the aircraft radio could easily be salvaged and could be useful to the brothers. Though the sea was rough and the journey dangerous, Ephraim sailed the Ramada back to Balo that night, retrieved the radio, and returned safely to Marau early the following morning. Over the following days, attempts to salvage more parts from the abandoned plane were defeated by the big seas and the fear of detection by the Japanese. They had to be content with the radio. On the night of 12 May, James took the airmen in the Ramada along the coast to Aola, the government station, a long journey of about 70 kilometres, and returned to Marau the following night. About that time, a small contingent of Australian soldiers visited Marau on a reconnaissance mission, and, with the brothers' permission, hid a small cache of ammunition in their garden. Brothers imprisoned by Japanese. Some months later, in early August 1942, during morning mass, two Japanese ships arrived in the bay. The missionaries knew that the long-expected Japanese landing at Marau was about to happen. However, they made no attempt to escape from the area. Their worst fears materialized about 10 a.m. when a landing party arrived. The Japanese commander told the brothers, through an interpreter, that they were now under Japanese control and they were not to leave the station. After a thorough search, several small firearms, food and other small items were confiscated, but the Australian ammunition and the aircraft radio were not discovered. The Japanese camped at nearby Paruru Plantation, which had been abandoned several months previously. That night, in a huge storm, the two Japanese craft were blown onto a reef in the bay. 2 days later, on 7 August, James recorded in his annals, "A big distraction at office time, 12:45. The brothers left their prayers to watch numerous American bombers overhead. One of the bombers broke formation and flew towards the stricken Japanese boats in the bay. Two bombs were released. There was a huge explosion as both ships were destroyed in full view of the brothers. The brothers' fear of some form of retaliation for the Japanese loss was well founded. At dawn the following day, Saturday, 8 August, a party of soldiers rushed at the brothers who were at prayer on their veranda and tied them up in the open, together with the two priests from the house nearby. Through the interpreter, they learned that they were to be killed as suspects for alerting the Americans to the presence of Japanese ships in their bay. "Where is your radio?" demanded the commander. "We have no radio," they replied. Another thorough search failed to find the aircraft radio, which had been well hidden. The missionaries believed their end had come. They were uncertain whether the rifles of the nearby soldiers or the sword of the commander himself would be the instrument of death. The threats continued for some time, as the commander tried in vain to extract information from the brothers and priests. At that moment, several Allied planes flew low over the mission, heading west. It was enough to save the day. The commander barked orders, the prisoners were untied, dragged inside their house, and tied up again. For 7 hours, numerous Allied aircraft flew overhead. Unknown to all involved in the drama inside the brothers' house, a bigger drama was occurring at that same time around Lunga Point, 100 kilometers to the west, where a massive landing of 10,000 American troops was underway. It was this coincidence which saved the brothers' lives. The Japanese, though clearly unnerved by the Allied air activity, continued their threats and search for the offending radio all that day. Finally, the soldiers demanded a meal, and Ephraim was untied to prepare it. Ephraim organized boys to collect potatoes from the garden, at the same time instructing one of the boys to get rid of the radio, which was hidden in the school building. The student sensibly disposed of it in the nearby river. After the meal, which the brothers and priests were permitted to share, the soldiers instructed the missionaries to stay near the buildings and said that a boat would come to collect them soon. No lights were permitted at night, and the missionaries were instructed to hide whenever planes flew overhead. This briefing concluded, the Japanese saluted the brothers and priests and marched off, laden with most of the brothers' possessions. "Prisoners on our own station," James lamented. For the next month, life continued in constant fear of another visit from the soldiers and with severe restrictions on the brothers' movements. Several times the brothers sent boys to the Japanese camp to ask permission to go fishing. The requests were at first refused, but later granted. On 30 August, the Japanese camp was found to be deserted. The Japanese never returned, and the priests, brothers, and boys rejoiced at the end of their captivity. Evacuation. Shortly afterwards, it became clear that missionaries were to be evacuated, but no one knew when or how. By now, the mission boats had been commandeered by the government, and the school had more or less ceased operation, though quite a few boys were still with the brothers, unable to travel. During the last eventful months at the station, the brothers were involved in helping several other American airmen who came to grief in waters near Marau. On 30 November 1942, Bishop Aubin wrote a farewell message to the brothers. It reads as follows. Dear brothers, before you leave the islands, I wish to express to you my sincere gratitude for the good work you have done at Marao. God knows, and he will give you your reward. I feel quite sad to see you leaving in such an emergency, but it is safer to do it. And I hope, dear brothers, that it is only for a time, and that you will come back and resume your work in our mission. God bless you, dear brothers. I ask our Blessed Mother to protect you during your journey. Pray for me and those of my missionaries who are staying with you, with me. Yours devotedly in JMJ, J.M. Aubin, Vicar Apostolic of the South Solomons. On 24 November, a government boat arrived. An officer informed the brothers that the evacuation would occur within days and that they should be ready. 4 days later, the boat returned to take them to Aola. James records in the Annals, quote, "It was a sad breaking up of our home. Some things were put on the boat and preparations made. The prospects of a sea trip were not bright with the Japanese so active and persistent. Saying goodbye to our boys was hard. We promised to come back when things got better. But when?" End of quote. At Aola, they met up with the other missionaries who would be evacuated with them. On 2 December, lights were seen flashing from a ship at sea, and later they were awakened to be told the evacuation would occur early the following morning. There was no more sleep that night as they made final preparations for departure, transferring to the troop ship USS Hunter Liggett in the early hours of the morning. Because Solomon Islands waters were still dangerous, the ship, which was evacuating many missionaries from Solomon Islands, spent several days in the vicinity of Tulagi, awaiting clearance, before setting sail for New Hebrides, now Vanuatu, on 5 December. During the voyage, there were several alarms, at the sound of which the missionaries were ordered below. James reported seeing on one occasion an apparently successful depth charge attack on a submarine, as oil and debris surfaced after the blast. On arrival at New Hebrides, James commented on the large number of ships, possibly 80 in the port. After transferring to the smaller troop carrier USS Kenmore, the brothers travelled to Noumea, which was also a hive of naval activity. There they spent an evening with 12 French brothers who welcomed them warmly. By 13 December they were sailing southwards, uncertain of their destination, until they had sailed due to military security. They found they were heading for Auckland, New Zealand, where they arrived on 15 December. Before arrival, the three brothers shaved their bushy beards, untouched since the Japanese soldiers stole their razors in August. The brothers stayed in New Zealand for 14 weeks, trying to secure a passage back to Australia, which in wartime was not easy. The Assistant General, Brother Clement Murray, a former Australian provincial, happened to be in Auckland at that time. It is said that he was surprised to see the three brothers and did not give them a warm reception. However, the New Zealand brothers made their prolonged stay as pleasant as possible under the circumstances. For most of the time, they lived at the Juniorate at Tuakau, about 50 kilometres south of Auckland. Eventually, they secured a passage from Wellington to Australia, arriving in Melbourne on 28 March 1943 and Mittagong on 1 April, where a great welcome awaited them. In September of that year, James wrote to Father Courtois, SM, at Avu Avu Mission Station, inquiring about the state of the brothers' house and the school. The reply, written on 11 November, told them that the bush materials buildings were beginning to deteriorate, the animals were in good condition, the furnishings were being used in the mission, and the cache of valuables buried by James was still safe. Courtois concluded, quote, "I wish you success in your work and a prompt return to Marao." End of quote. The Morris brothers did return to Morrell, but not until the year 2000, 58 years later. Coincidentally, the second opening at Morrell was also short-lived and terminated by conflict, the ethnic tension of 1988 to 2002. 3 years later, in 1946, the brothers returned to the Solomons, where they opened a school at Tinaroo. James, however, was not reappointed to the Solomons. He began working at formation centres in 1946, first in Victoria, then at Mittagong, New South Wales. Following a long period of teaching in Australian schools, he returned to Mittagong in his later years, where he lived for about 25 years. Many Australian brothers knew him there during their formation years. Often he entertained the young juniors with stories of his pioneering days in the Solomons. Brother James Thrift died at St. Joseph's College, Hunters Hill, Australia, in 1983.